Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Dr. Kate, and welcome to Revolution Radio. It is Wednesday, June 6, 2012, and that was Keb Moe singing America the Beautiful, one of my favorite renditions, but one of the most beautiful songs that we have, America the Beautiful. And I know we're all nostalgic thinking about it right now as we see our country slipping away, but take heart. We have awakened. We hope that it's in time. We have no guarantee that it is. But the New World Order, and things are not going to happen without a fight and without a record of resistance that we will make and create and that we're doing even right now. So today is D-Day, the anniversary of D-Day. And, of course, none of our leaders are honoring that. There's been very little publication of anything. There's no recognition of the sacrifice that our soldiers have made and that many millions of people made during World War II when we were fighting what we thought was a clear enemy. As it turns out, the same people who are controlling us right now we're also funding Hitler, and we're funding Stalin, and we're funding the British and the Americans. And, you know, we had the sinking of the Titanic and the Lusitania, all of these things designed to bring America into the World War. But we had the Rothschilds and the Rothschild formula funding both sides. This is all mixed up in a lot of things. The Synagogue of Satan is involved because of the treatment of the Jews, and many other things happened after World War II. But the point is this evening I'd like to take just a little bit of time to honor our veterans and those who sacrificed for us on D-Day in 1944, whenever it was. And I'm sorry I don't have my history down right there. And then I'd like to play a couple of advertisements, which I think you'll enjoy. And then what I'd really like to do, and what I will do, is to replay a speech by Alan Keyes given at the Rally for Common Sense, which I think you will all find completely inspirational. So with that, let me say hello to the chat room. Hi, Bob. Looks like it's just you and me most of the time. I agree. The Wisconsin election recall defeat by Walker won the recall election, which is good. The media is all playing it as bad for labor and divisive and so forth. But if you step back and see where we're at, you can see that the media is definitely not our friend. And they are lying to us, and they have an agenda. And it's not our agenda. And if you look at my recent post on Mediagate since 9/11, you can see the same kind of tactics the media has used on the constitutionalists who are concerned about Obama's eligibility. They used on the 9/11 truthers, you know, even calling them truthers like they called the birthers and so forth. It's the same plan. You think about why Congress has been silent on all these things. Well, trace it back to 9/11, and you'll see somebody knew something that happened, and all of them are engaged. Why in the world would they say nothing about an obvious usurper right now in the White House? So in any case, I'm a little distressed, but I'd like to hearken back to the days when we were a free people and when we knew what our role was in the world and when we were honorable. This is a speech by President Reagan at Normandy. At Normandy on the 6th of June, 1984. And I'm just going to go ahead and read through it. Obviously, I wish Reagan was here, and I wish I had found the tape of this speech, but it's marvelous. Here we go. We're here to mark that day in history when the Allied armies joined in battle to reclaim this continent to liberty. For four long years, much of Europe had been under a terrible shadow. Free nations had fallen. Jews cried out in the camps. Millions cried out for liberation. Europe was enslaved, and the world prayed for its rescue. Here in Normandy, the rescue began. Here, the Allies stood and fought against tyranny in a giant undertaking unparalleled in human history. We stand on a lonely windswept point on the northern shore of France. The air is soft. But 40 years ago at this moment, the air was dense with smoke and the cries of men, and the air was filled with the crack of rifle fire and the roar of cannon. At dawn, on the morning of the 6th of June, 1944, 225 Rangers jumped off a British landing craft and ran to the bottom of these cliffs. Their mission was one of the most difficult and daring of the invasion, to climb these sheer and desolate cliffs and take out the enemy guns. The Allies had been told that some of the mightiest of these guns were here, and they would be trained on the beaches to stop the Allied advance. The Rangers looked up and saw enemy soldiers at the edge of the cliff, shooting down at them with machine guns and throwing grenades. And the American Rangers began to climb. They shot rope ladders all over the face of these cliffs and began to pull themselves up. When one ranger fell, another would take his place. When one rope was cut, a ranger would grab another and begin his climb again. They climbed, shot back, and held their footing. Soon, one by one, the rangers pulled themselves over the top, and in seizing the firm land at the top of these cliffs, they began to seize back the continent of Europe. 225 came here. After two days of fighting, only 90 could still bear arms. Behind me is a memorial that symbolizes the ranger daggers that were thrust into the top of these cliffs. And before me are the men who put them there. These are the boys of Pont du Halt. These are the men who took the cliffs. These are the champions who helped free a continent. These are the heroes who helped end a war. Gentlemen, I look at you and I think of the words of Stephen Spender's poem. You are men who in your lives fought for life and left the vivid air singed with your honor. I think I know what you may be thinking right now, thinking, quote, we were just part of a bigger effort. Everyone was brave that day, unquote. Well, everyone was. You remember the story of Bill Millen of the 51st Highlanders. 40 years ago today, British troops were pinned down near a bridge, waiting desperately for help. Suddenly they heard the sound of bagpipes, and some thought they were dreaming. Well, they weren't. They looked up and saw Bill Millen with his bagpipes leading the reinforcements and ignoring the smack of bullets into the ground around him. Lord Lovat was with him, Lord Lovat of Scotland, who calmly announced when he got to the bridge, sorry, I'm a few minutes late, as if he'd been delayed by a traffic jam, when in truth he'd just come from bloody fighting on Sword Beach, which he and his men had just taken. There was the impossible valor of the Poles who threw themselves between the enemy and the rest of Europe as the invasion took hold, and the unsurpassed courage of the Canadians who had already seen the horrors of war on this coast. They knew what awaited them there, but they would not be deterred. At once they hit Juno Beach, and once they hit Juno Beach, they never looked back. All of these men were part of a roll call of honor with names that spoke of a pride as bright as the colors they bore. The Royal Winnipeg Rifles, Poland's 24th Lancers, the Royal Scots of Fusiliers, the Screaming Eagles, the Yeomen of England's Armored Divisions, the Forces of Free France, the Coast Guard's Matchbox Fleet, and you, the American Rangers. 40 summers have passed since the battle that you fought here. You were young that day when you took these cliffs. Some of you were hardly more than boys, with the deepest joys of life before you. Yet you risked everything here. Why? Why did you do it? What impelled you to put aside the instinct for self-preservation your lives to take these cliffs? What inspired all the men of the armies that met here? We look at you and somehow we know the answer. It was faith and belief. It was loyalty and love. The men of Normandy had faith that what they were doing was right, faith that they fought for all humanity, faith that a just God would grant them mercy on this beachhead or on the next. It was the deep knowledge, and pray God we have not lost it, that there is a profound moral difference between the use of force for liberation and the use of force for conquest. You are here to liberate, not to conquer, and so you and others did not doubt your cause. You were right not to doubt. You knew that some things are worth dying for. One country is worth dying for, and democracy is worth dying for, because it's the most deeply honorable form of government ever devised by man. All of you love liberty. All of you were willing to fight tyranny, and you knew the people of your countries were behind you. The Americans who fought here that morning knew word of the invasion was spreading through the darkness back home. They fought, or felt in their hearts, so they couldn't know in fact that in Georgia they were filling the churches at 4 a.m., in Kansas City they were kneeling on their porches and praying, and in Philadelphia they were ringing the Liberty Bell. Something else helped the men of D-Day. their rock-hard belief that Providence would have a great hand in the events that would unfold here, that God was an ally in this great cause. And so, the night before the invasion, when Colonel Wolverton asked his parachute troops to kneel with him in prayer, he told them, "Do not bow your heads, but look up so you can see God and ask his blessing in what you are about to do." Also that night, General Matthew Ridgway, on his cot, listening in the darkness for the promise God made to Joshua, "I will not fail thee nor forsake thee." These are the things that impelled them. These are the things that shaped the unity of the Allies. When the war was over, there were lives to rebuild and governments to be returned to the people. There were nations to be reborn. Above all, there was a new peace to be assured. These were huge and daunting tasks, but the Allies summoned strength from the faith, belief, loyalty, and love of those who fell here. They rebuilt a new Europe together. There was a first great reconciliation among those who had been enemies, all of whom had suffered greatly. The United States did its part, creating the Marshall Plan to help rebuild our allies and our former enemies. The Marshall Plan led to the Atlantic Alliance, a great alliance that serves to this day as our shield for freedom, prosperity, and for peace. In spite of our great efforts and successes, not all that followed the end of the war was happy or planned. Some liberated countries were lost. The great sadness of this loss echoes down to our own time in the streets of Warsaw, Prague, and East Berlin. Soviet troops that came to the center of this continent did not leave when peace came. They're still here, uninvited, unwanted, unyielding, almost 40 years after the war. Because of this, Allied forces still stand on this continent. Today, as 40 years ago, our armies are here for only one purpose, to protect and defend democracy. The only territories we hold are memorials like this one and graveyards where our heroes rest. We in America have learned bitter lessons from the two world wars. It is better to be here ready to protect the peace than to take blind shelter across the sea, rushing to respond only after freedom is lost. We've learned that isolationism never was and never will be an acceptable response to tyrannical governments with an expansionist intent. But we try always to be prepared for peace, prepared to deter aggression, prepared to negotiate the reduction of arms, and yes, prepared to reach out again in the spirit of reconciliation. In truth, there is no reconciliation. We would welcome more than a reconciliation with the Soviet Union. So together, we can lessen the risks of war now and forever. It's fitting to remember here the great losses also suffered by the Russian people during World War II. 20 million perished, a terrible price that testifies to all the world the necessity of ending war. I tell you from my heart that we in the United States do not want war. We want to wipe from the face of the earth the terrible weapons that man now has in his hands. And I tell you, we are ready to seize that beachhead. We look for some sign from the Soviet Union that they are willing to move forward, that they share our desire and love for peace, and that they will give up the ways of conquest. There must be a changing there that will allow us to turn our hope into action. We will pray forever that someday that changing will come, but for now, particularly today, it is good and fitting to renew our commitment to each other, to our freedom, and to the alliance that protects it. We're bound today by what bound us 40 years ago, the same loyalties, traditions, and beliefs. We're bound by reality. The strength of America's allies is vital to the United States, and the American security guarantee is essential to the combined and continued freedom of Europe's democracies. We were with you then, and we are with you now. Your hopes are our hopes, and your destiny is our destiny. Here in this place where the West held together, let us make a vow to our dead. Let us show them by our actions that we understand what they died for. Let our actions say to them the words for which Matthew Ridgway listened, "I will not fail thee nor forsake thee." strengthened by their courage, heartened by their valor, and borne by their memory, let us continue to stand for the ideals which they lived and died. Thank you very much. God bless you. That was Ronald Reagan in Normandy on the 6th of June in 1984. Now, where is our usurper-in-chief today? Probably playing golf or showing his buddies around the White House or doing something else. So, didn't it give you a nostalgic feeling about what it used to be like here in America? I know that Reagan was not the greatest thing. And I know that there are problems in the spending and so forth and so on. And he followed Carter and Nixon, who led us into some pretty bad situations. But Reagan was a bright point, I have to say, given that we've had the two Bushes, the Clinton, and now we have someone who's totally unqualified for the office itself. Before we get into Alan Keyes' speech, I'm going to run a two-minute advertising spot for the Article 2 Super PAC. And many of you know Dean Haskins, but check out this very nice advertisement for Article 2. Here we go.
Barack Obama has usurped the presidency, and in so doing is now on the fast track to destroy America. Despite Obama's anti-American policies and disdain for the rule of law, there's a more basic and fundamental issue that needs to be addressed. It is the fact that Barack Obama was never constitutionally qualified to be president of the United States because he is not a natural-born citizen as mandated under Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution. Simply put, Obama was not born to American citizen parents. That's parents, plural. He is an unlawful president. Answering the call to defend the Constitution, fellow Americans across the country have joined forces and proudly announced Article 2 Super PAC. Article 2 Super PAC's overall goal is to ensure that citizens and elected officials clearly understand Article 2 in the definitive meaning of natural-born citizen as intended by our founding fathers, thereby working to create a legally binding vetting apparatus which will ensure that all future presidential and vice presidential candidates are constitutionally eligible. We at ART 2 Super PAC are raising the needed resources to develop materials to promote our message across the country, assisting with key state ballot challenges, assembling our legal team of constitutional and elections law experts, and so much more. Please do your part to help save America for future generations and help support ART 2 Super PAC. You may donate online at www.art2superpac.com. That's A-R-T, the number 2, superpac.com. Or you may mail a donation to P.O. Box 940661, Simi Valley, California, 93094. We must work together to get our country back on course. We must throw off this ever-tightening noose of tyranny. We must preserve the founding principles upon which this great country was founded. Paid for by Article 2 Super PAC, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Thank you, Dean Haskins, and the Article 2 Super PAC, which, as it said, is determined to educate as many Americans as possible as to the Article 2 requirements for the presidency. And I think when we look at Wisconsin last night, we have to understand that the Democrats were cheating, of course, but we have to overwhelm them with votes to prevent any kind of cheating that happened in 2008. Fortunately, there are not the caucuses where that kind of cheating can happen on the Democratic side, but it is very clear that we must come out in numbers. Now, am I happy with Romney? No, I'm definitely not happy with Romney. Would I rather see Ron Paul? Yes, I would. But we are in an interesting situation. The Republicans have maneuvered us once again to have to vote for the lesser of two evils. Well, you're still voting for evil. So this is going to be very interesting. So just because we remove Obama by the vote does not mean the battle is over, because then we've still got another New World Order stooge who's ready to step in his place. At least he's an American. But that hasn't helped us before, since we've had plenty of people betray us. Okay, so rather than focusing on the sheer Armageddon we face, I'd like to move into a speech by Alan Keyes. It's about 32 minutes, and it was at the California Rally for Common Sense. I hope you'll agree with me. I think it's quite an inspirational speech, and so it's about 30 minutes, and I'll be back after that. Here we go. Alan Keyes.
Thank you. Now, as is unfortunately typical of me, I suddenly caught out of the side of my ear the name Alan, and I said to myself, he's introducing me. I have to get up and speak. But what I was doing was actually part of what I hope will be my message for you today. Now, I often have to tell my audiences that you need for a moment to kind of brace yourself, because wherever you are or think you are in terms of our politics and what you desire, some of the things that I'm about to say to you will make you uncomfortable, I think. But I will say them because, contrary to what some people believe, I don't believe that it's possible to be truly optimistic about a situation you're not willing to look at. It's sort of like being optimistic about the outcome of an operation when a doctor hasn't been given a chance to diagnose the problem. Can't tell whether you need a heart surgery or a liver transplant, and you're going to be optimistic about the outcome of the operation. I'd rather have a doctor who knew what the problem was. Because if he knows what the problem is, maybe there's some chance that he'll do the right thing in order to deal with the problem. But if he's lying about the problem, then you're lying to yourself if you're optimistic about the solution. And I sadly believe that is the truth about the situation of our country, of our liberty, and of our Constitution today. We are unfortunately confronted with what I believe is the worst situation for liberty in the history of our nation. I believe that in more ways than we are many times willing to admit, our liberty has already been destroyed, violated, trampled upon, and discarded. And I deeply believe that whatever we are being told by those who are the agents of the present partisan system for politics, they tell us what is in their interest. They tell us what serves the purposes of the money powers and the corporate powers and the media powers that create them. They are no longer sharing with us anything that has to do with our good and with our better future and better destiny as a people. And that means that we need to look at some of these things for ourselves and to look clearly, closely, carefully at the truth of them. And I want to begin today by taking perhaps as a standard and guide for my little discussion some of the things that were shared with us by the founding fathers of our country. In particular, I remember that as part of his legacy, in the last formal speech he gave, or statement he released as President of the United States, his famous farewell address, George Washington actually counseled the nation against the politics of party. And he wasn't talking about this party or that party, the Republican Party, the Democrat Party, all of this. He was talking about what he called the spirit of party itself. And he said that that spirit of party would inevitably lead to a situation in which people were first pandered to, told by leaders what they wanted to hear, promised anything that folks thought they wanted to have, and that by means of those promises, the factions, he called them, that is, groups and associations of people working together in their own interest and against the common interest and the common good of the people and the country, that these factions would then gather power into their own hands. And when it had been sufficiently gathered, they would then set up a demagogue who would represent that unbridled, unlimited, unconstitutional concentration of power. And they would turn our country from a free republic into a tyranny. Turn us from a free people into the subjects of a tyrant demagogue and tyrant class and tyrant elite, pushing us back to the very same status that has been the bane of humankind in every country, in every climate, in every era of the world until America was founded. What I want to say to you today is that some people would say, well, we've had all these parties and Washington was wrong, and I want you to look at your situation. And I want you to tell me that we are not right now faced with so-called parties who represent an association of people who are gathering power into their hands in their own interest, that they are robbing our public treasury in their own interest, that they are distributing the results to their own cronies without any regard for our interest, for our future, for our posterity. I believe that what Washington predicted is exactly what we have. Our parties have adopted the politics of demagoguery and pandering and used that politics in order to despoil us of our income and finally of our free institutions. And I think, y'all, that this is not an outcome that is coming. We are in the midst of it. And I deeply believe that the 2012 election could mark that period at the end of the American sentence in which the great project and experiment in government of, by, and for the people comes to an end. And believe me, you shouldn't fool yourself into thinking, oh, Alan, the elections will go on. If we're going to have elections that have the same integrity, the same fairness, the same true reflection of the people that we have been seeing during this primary season, then excuse me, those are no elections at all. We might as well be living in the Soviet Union if we take that fraud as the choice of the people. And it was a fraud perpetrated, I think, pretty openly. I pity some of the folks who are on the Republican side who haven't yet gone to the polls to vote in the primary process, because it looks as if they've been disenfranchised. But you want to know the truth, y'all? I think we've all been disenfranchised. I think we've just been disenfranchised because, in addition to forgetting the wisdom of Washington, we have actually forgotten the wisdom of another great founder, shared by many of them, who, when they looked at the history of democracies — this is a word that the elitists now like to use a lot to try to herd people toward their side. We're Democrats. We're for democracy. You do realize that our founders looked at the record of democracies in the history of the world, and they saw that with almost no exception, every single one of them had failed. They had ended up in anarchy and disorder and civil conflict and ruin for their country. And our founders looked at that example and they said, wait a minute, we believe in government that is based upon the unalienable rights of the people, but we don't want it to turn out that way. And so they didn't establish direct democracy. They based our country on the principle of representation, so that the people would govern through their chosen representatives. Is that what happens today? See, because I remember, I'll go through practical example, my own life, people approaching me in 2008, and a lot of people were persuading me that I had to vote for John McCain because you didn't want bad old nasty Obama to come in. Now, here they're talking to a guy, if I knew bad old nasty Obama, I was not only knew him, I was calling him by his right name long before any of these people. I was being honest with the people of this country about his dyed-in-the-wool, pro-baby-killing, infanticide record. I was being honest about his background of indoctrination in the Marxist, leninist, communist approach to government. I was being honest about the truth of his record in politics and organizing at the community level, where he implemented the programs and projects and ideas of Gramsci and Saul Alinsky and other well-known communist philosophers and theorists and practitioners. And I had to put up with leaders in the Republican Party telling me that I was being extreme, and he was so moderate in his speech, and I'm trying to look at them and make the simple point. I'm not going to tell people lies. I'm going to tell them the truth based on the record of information I have in front of me. And that's what I did. Okay? But they were quite willing to let him pass forth. And there's these same people coming. Some of them, and say, we ought to vote for McCain. We've got to keep Obama out. Did you know he's a communist? And I said, whoa. Fine time for you to be waking up. But what is the choice they were offering? I went down the list and I saw that John McCain had been good at one time. And then on every issue of importance to me, and I think most of the grassroots, he went as bad as you can get. Pro-life, issues like this, the border security and immigration, constraints and restraint in the budget process, even nomination and processes on judges and stuff. Not good. Bad. And I, when they finally said to me, you got to go and tell your folks, they have no choice but to vote for John McCain. I said to them, well, wait a minute. I know Obama's bad. But you know what was my conviction then? It's my conviction now. That once the people of this country found out, past the lies and the misrepresentation of the media, past the cowardly reluctance and silence of the so-called Republicans, when they finally found out from his words and from his deeds and from his actions who exactly he was, I used to tell people that once the American people found out who Barack Obama was, they'd have only one desire, and that would be to vomit him up, to vomit him out, and to make sure he would have no lasting effect on the destiny of our country. And that's where we are. So far from killing America, what he has done is rouse the American people in defense of the simple truth. We will say yes to our liberty, yes to the Constitution, but no to socialism and every demagogic tyrant who offers it to us. But here's my tragedy now. And it ought to be a tragedy for all of you, but it's a natural result of accepting what I was asked to do and refused to do in 2008. Everybody said, but Alan, you got to vote for the lesser of evils. We know, and they did too, all these leaders I talked to, they knew that John McCain wasn't good. They knew he didn't represent their people and what they wanted. But he said, we got back because he's the lesser of evils. And I said then, I wrote in an article called In Good Conscience, which is up on WorldNet Daily and my blog, in which I pointed out the problem with voting for the lesser of evils, y'all. There's one that's very pithy. The problem with voting for the lesser evil is that when the smoke clears, you're still being ruled by evil. You do understand that, right? The lesser of evils is evil still. The other problem with it is worse than that. The problem with voting for the lesser evils is that you then hand the standard for your vote to the evil side. And if they want you to get really evil, they will simply find and put up the most obvious and apparent and deep-dyed wickedness they can contrive. And when you vote for the lesser of evil, you'll be voting for just about the most deep-dyed wickedness you can find, but it'll be the lesser evil. Now here's what I warn you all, especially those of you who believe as our founders did in the Creator God and His laws of nature that He put to govern us and the universe. The one thing you can be certain of, if you have no choice but evil, is that you have left the kingdom of God. You are not in Kansas anymore. When your only choice for rulership is Satan and Beelzebub, you better wake up and smell the sulfur, because you know where you are. Now you tell me, how many more times are you going to accept it? How many times are you going to take the next step and the next step and the next step deeper into that kingdom where evil rules and you are no no longer represented. The problem with voting for choices that don't represent you is that it doesn't take long before you get a government that doesn't represent you. And that's what you have now. And we know it, too. That's why the Congress, for all its Republican majority in the House, gets, what, less than 30% approval in these so-called polls. It's because people are not that stupid that they don't see that they wanted a ceiling on the indebtedness of this country so we would stop betraying and impoverishing future generations, and instead we got more of the same. They wanted controls on the spending so that there would be discipline reintroduced so we would not put enslaving debt deeper and deeper onto the back of our children and our grandchildren, and instead we've gotten more of the same. For all the effort that was made in 2010, for all the folks that were elected, you show me one area. Did it stop them from passing a National Defense Authorization Act that leaves every citizen in this country prey to arrest in the dark of the night without explanation, without warrant, without courts, without judges, to be put away and never heard from again? Did it stop them? No, it did not. Did it stop them from handing to the Barack Obama that the Republican leadership claims to dislike and claims to believe is so dangerous? Did it stop them from handing him the power to raise the debt ceiling at will? No, it didn't stop them. Now, I'll be honest with you. That power of arresting folks without due process of law under the excuse that they have acted like or spoken like or done like some association with terrorism. You do know that under this administration, as I recall, they have sent communications out to the police at the state and local level in which they have included on in their list of people who should be regarded as potential terrorists and terrorist associates, returning veterans, homeschoolers, Second Amendment rights supporters. So I would ask those of you who think that that Constitution ought to be respected, that when you stand up and say so, these folks will now identify you as somebody who believes in or associates with terrorists. And they will point to NDAA and say, you can be locked up in the middle of the night by the military and never heard from again if you don't shut up. I think that's a chilling effect on free speech, don't you? Yes. Now, these are the folks, by the way, the folks who passed this in a big bipartisan majority. These include the folks who came to the Congress as a result of Tea Party action and activity. Two-thirds of them ended up with their arms twisted up practically out of their sockets by a corrupt Republican leadership that ended up persuading and forcing them to vote in a way that contradicted and betrayed the constituents who elected them. But if you keep voting for choices that don't represent you, you get a party system that doesn't represent you. You get a government weighted in the favor of leadership that doesn't represent you. When will it end? And people keep telling me, no, we got to do this. We got to stay within these bounds. And I'm telling you straight. We need to return to the wisdom of our founders. George Washington thought that the people of this country would be able to act and choose and govern themselves without factions and parties and the corrupt associations of selfish interests that they have become. And you know what I think? I think that the activities and the movement and the courage and the heart of Tea Party people at the grassroots has proven that Washington knows what he's talking about. We have finally come to the crisis. No leader will rescue us. No party will rescue us. The only thing that can save this nation now is the people themselves, encouraged by their faith in God and unwilling to give up the courage that that faith brings. But here's the simple question. How do we do this? I want to take a few minutes and explain to you in outline, because you can go on my blog, alankeyes.com. Have to spell it right, A-L-A-N-K-E-Y-E-S, alankeyes.com, or loyaltoliberty.com, gets to the same place, which is my blog. In the last week or so, I have written a series of articles, starting with the wisdom of George Washington and talking about Madison's view of representation, and trying to acquaint people again with the truth. They keep telling us that when we go to vote, we are choosing our leaders. And I keep trying to tell people, wait, when everybody says that, when you hear it on TV and everything, translate the word leader into German, and you will understand what's really going on. What's the German word for leader? What is it? Führer. Now, how would you like that? We have a whole bunch of people telling us that the purpose of our elections is to choose our Führers. The purpose of our presidential election is to choose our Führer. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah.
See, when you translate it that way, you realize that they're saying something that is un-American, that has nothing whatsoever to do with the people we are supposed to be. Do you know why? Because of that principle of representation. Think about it for 1 second. If you send somebody out to represent you, when that person comes to act, who are they supposed to act like? And when that person comes to speak and say a word to a gathering, who are they supposed to speak like? And when that person comes to vote on legislation or on action, who are they supposed to vote like? Now, let's see. If I'm looking to somebody else and doing what they example, what they pattern, what they say, who's the leader in that relationship? The people are in the lead. The people are the leaders here. We don't go to the polls to elect leaders. We go to the polls to elect people who will follow our lead. But not in the minds of the party potentates, not in the minds of those who have imposed upon us this corrupt system that now serves the interests of a little elite clique and that seeks to impose upon us their loss of faith in God, their loss of belief in the natural rights of family, their abandonment of the Constitution, their abandonment of the simple, self-evident truths that were shared in our Declaration. That's the problem we have now. Our parties are in the hands of elitist factions. It's literally the case, you know. People were asking me about Newt Gingrich during the campaign, and I kept inviting folks who asked me to go and notice that he had written a foreword to a book by a guy named Alvin Toffler. And that in this book, Toffler had outlined an internationalist scheme of government that was based upon the top elites and the sub-elites and the sub-sub-elites and how they were going to rule and control countries. Right? I hate to remind you of this, but elitism is not republicanism. Elitism has nothing to do with the constitutional republic, the government of, by, and for the people that the founder of the Republican Party so eloquently and rightly observed to be the last best hope of humankind. Our destiny is to be that people represented in government, not people who are ruled over by wise and benevolent and quality leaders who know better than we do that we should have families based on homosexuality, that we should have hospitals that practice the murder of our unborn children, and that we have schools that teach us that right is the unbridled freedom to have what we want and do what we please. It is not going to maintain self-government, because the root of self-government is just that, governing yourself, starting with your own heart, starting with your response to those God-given obligations to care for children and family and community. Do you know why they're called rights? Because they belong to the people who do what is right. And when you're doing what is right according to the laws of nature and nature's God, when you act according to that standard of right, which is the standard of the one who is the ruler and will be the judge of the universe, then you have the right to do what he commands you to do. Then you have the right to respond to that responsibility he has imposed upon you. Rights are not about doing what we please. They are about doing what pleases the standard of the Creator God who made us all. Our founders understood this. I think most of the people in our country, the grassroots bedrock folks who are doing their duty, they are trying to raise their children. They are trying to have decent families. They are trying to have the livelihood that will allow them to play a decent role in their community, to raise up new generations that will be the kind of citizens that will maintain the liberty and strength of this country. I know and I believe that a great majority of the American people represent that kind of commitment to decency and to right, but they are no longer represented in our politics, no longer represented in our government. Instead, things that contradict the very heart of their decency are being imposed upon us by law, used to silence the preachers in our pulpits, and used to demand that even those we send in defense of our country shall be indoctrinated in their doctrines of wrong. Can we ever end this? Well, see, I think we've already been practicing. And in fact, this gathering here today is an example of that practice. Washington wasn't a fool. In fact, without his support, the Constitution would never have been adopted. He was that strongly influential. He must have had some idea of what was in it, don't you think? And do you realize that according to what the Constitution says, the election of President of the United States doesn't occur on November 6th? When you go to the polls on November 6th, you will not elect the President of the United States. According to the Constitution of the United States, that election takes place when the Electoral College members are gathered in their respective state capitals and cast their vote for those offices. Who are these electors? Well, they're supposed to be the representatives of people at the grassroots who choose them. That's what they're supposed to be. You and I know what they really are now. They are the carefully chosen rewardees, people being rewarded for their support of the party bosses and the party structure. They represent the powers who have usurped the choices of the American people, who are pre-selecting the slates and predetermining the outcomes of our elections, and then handing the sham over to the American people, like the sham elections in the Soviet Union, to be rubber stamped by an electorate that is no longer represented by the choices they have foisted off on us. And I know some of you will be upset with me for this, but don't even whisper the name of Mitt Romney trying to tell me that that isn't what I'm talking about, because it is. I know his record. I know his imposition of gay marriage unilaterally by executive order and authority on the people of Massachusetts. I know his willingness to subvert the separation of powers explicitly outlined in the Massachusetts Constitution, so there could be no doubt that no opinion of any court had the force of law. When his supporters say he had to do what the court said, I say he had to do what the Constitution said. And what is even worse than the promotion of gay marriage, my opinion, well, that's bad enough, was the promotion of the view that the executive must kowtow to the courts even when the courts violate the Constitution. Is that true? How can it be possibly true? Because then the judges would be hired in the Constitution and we wouldn't have constitutional government anymore. Okay? They say they're giving you a choice. Last time I looked, Barack Obama was the abuser of executive orders, but Mitt Romney showed him the lead. The last time I looked, Barack Obama was pushing for socialist health care, and he wanted to include government-funded abortion and individual mandates that violate our constitutional rights of property. And people are trying to tell me, but Mitt Romney, he's the alternative, and I'm saying, yeah, he's the alternative because he's already done what Obama's only trying to do. He's already imposed socialist health care in Massachusetts. He's already had a health program that included $50 copay abortions, that included individual mandates, all the things we fight against. He's already done. And now he goes around the country saying, but that was just for Massachusetts. I wouldn't want to do that to the country. Not the way he was talking in 2007, 2008, when he went around this country pointing to his health care as a model for the nation. How often shall we be lied to by the media, by the candidates, by the parties, before we wake up and realize We won't take back the choice until we are making the choices. And how can we do that? One simple word. Two words. The Electoral College. I want you to go to my website. Read the articles I posted there. The Electoral College, as it is now elected, would be a college where, if people put their mind to it, especially those who have been practicing and training in the Tea Party effort, put your mind not to electing a president, but to electing the electors who will choose the next president. To electing only people who will vote as you would vote, act as you would act. Not people who are controlled by the money, not people who are controlled by the media, but people who are controlled by the hearts and the will of the decent-minded folks who have banded together to save America. If there is a way to put slates of electors like that on the ballot and elect that majority to the Electoral College, then the world would awaken on November 7th to a breathtaking truth. That after all this effort to take away the Constitution and take away the liberty of our people, the people of America, having practiced in the Tea Party movement, had applied what they learned to take back the most important choice in their nation's life, and had given that opportunity for choice only to people who represented their heart for the Constitution, for the Declaration, for the restoration of fiscal sanity and moral decency in our country. And in that moment, we will have ended the danger that government of, by, and for the people will be overthrown. We will have reasserted the truth that the people of this country are still in control of its destiny. And you know what makes me even more hopeful? Think of all the technology that we now have at our disposal to gather together, to encourage one another in a massive movement that can now span the country in an instant if we have the will to organize it. Doesn't need money, doesn't need all the backing of these and those powers. It needs only the initiative and heart of people just like you. My counsel to you is to take that initiative, to stand forward and retake the choice so that we can begin after 2012, not to lament the end of the American Republic, but to lament the new beginning that came not because of some saving candidate, not because of some saving leader, but because of the saving grace of a God that had inspired the heart of a people to stand forward and be the leaders of their country again, so that they could continue to live as the free people of that country, handing that liberty to their children and to their grandchildren as long as God intends. God bless you.
To hitchhike from Saginaw, I've come to look for. scenery. She read her magazine, and the moon rose over an open field. Kathy, I'm lost, I said, though I knew she was sleeping. I'm empty and aching, and I don't know why. Counting the cars, I'm the new judge, you turn back, they've all come to look for me.
Barack Obama has usurped the presidency, and in so doing is now on the fast track to destroy America. Despite Obama's anti-American policies and disdain for the rule of law, there's a more basic and fundamental issue that needs to be addressed. It is the fact that Barack Obama was never constitutionally qualified to be president of the United States because he is not a natural-born citizen as mandated under Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution. Simply put, Obama was not born to American citizen parents. That's parents, plural. He is an unlawful president. Answering the call to defend the Constitution, fellow Americans across the country have joined forces and proudly announced Article 2 Super PAC. Article 2 Super PAC's overall goal is to ensure that citizens and elected officials clearly understand Article 2 and the definitive meaning of natural-born citizen as intended by our founding fathers, thereby working to create a legally binding vetting apparatus which will ensure that all future presidential and vice presidential candidates are constitutionally eligible. We at ART2 Super PAC are raising the needed resources to develop materials to promote our message across the country, assisting with key state ballot challenges, assembling our legal team of constitutional and elections law experts, and so much more. Please do your part to help save America for future generations and help support ART2 Super PAC. You may donate online at www.art2superpac.com. That's ART2SuperPac.com. Or you may mail a donation to P.O. Box 940661, Simi Valley, California, 93094. We must work together to get our country back on course. We must throw off this ever-tightening noose of tyranny. We must preserve the founding principles upon which this great country was founded. Paid for by Article 2 Super PAC, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Well, thank you, Ellen Keyes, and thank you, Dean Haskins, for the Article 2 Super PAC advertisement spot. In the chat room, Tenacity has said a lot of good things. It's really true that Ellen Keyes was right on the money there. I hope the lecture gave you the chills that it did to me. I know that it does to a lot of people, but he is absolutely right. And he is the threat to tyranny, as Tenacity said. I'm going to give Tenacity a live mic, and anyone else who wants to call in and perhaps share their views on the talk, or what we face, or where we're going with this Romney thing. We got an update from Ron Paul. He has about 500 delegates. 200 of them are bound to him. Or 200 are unbound, as I understand it. But Tenacity, what do you think? This is the second time you've heard that that speech as just as powerful as it was before. I think you've got to unmute yourself. Are you there? Tenacity, are you there? You have a live mic. Oh, let me see what I've got here. You've got a live mic, Ten, and just asked you a couple of questions there. I think you just need to unmute yourself. Are you there? Are you there? You have a live mic, Ten. Okay. Can't hear you at all. Let me try this again. Let's see. You are live. Are you there? Okay. For some reason, you're not coming through. Just keep talking. Anyway, good evening. Hi, Jan. Hi, everybody who's joined us. We just had the great speech from Alan Keyes, and we can go from there. Terry, can't hear you. You do have a live mic here, but we're not hearing you. So
are you
I don't
hearing
know
me now?
You're... Yeah, there you go. There you go.
It wasn't the mute button on Skype. It was a mute button on my headset.
Oh, my goodness. Well, good. Well, welcome. Well, let me repeat those questions. What do you think about this speech, and where are we going, and what do you think about his comments about Romney and what our next choices are?
Well, I just wish he had spoken that way when he was a candidate.
Yep.
You know, it's funny how when these guys get involved in parties and are running as a candidate or a nomination for a party, they are so muted in what they say and so concerned that something's going to come back to haunt them. And, you know, it sent chills up my spine to hear him with the kind of passion that he did saying and speaking the truth the way he did. He hit on all cylinders. What he said about Romney is absolutely the truth. What he said about Obama is absolutely the truth. And what he said about the people is absolutely the truth. I mean, it's just like I said in the chat, and that is that any founder would have been proud of that speech. And as a matter of fact, I think he spoke as well as any founder ever did.
I agree.
You know, the whole concept of the evils of party politics, boy, he nailed it. He just flat out nailed it. And bringing out the words that he did of the founders that he did were so perfectly entwined in what he said. It is what we need to do. He is absolutely correct. The whole concept of voting for people who do not represent you, leading to a government that does not represent you. Wow, I mean, we've been there for a long time.
Well,
we've been there for over 100 years.
We have, and, you know, this is what Red Beckman says all the time. We let the Constitution down by not paying attention and by not voting for people who really are going to represent us. And all these sort of silent things that have happened have just ruined our country. I mean, look at all the Tea Party candidates who were elected, and like Marco Rubio, they defend the national NDAA. I mean, were we just given just a lie, or were they really Tea Party people? And was it that easy to twist arms of people like that? It turns one away from running for office, but on the other hand, how are we going to change this unless we do? You know, I begin to think that 100% of the Democrats need to be replaced, and probably 99% of the Republicans need to be replaced. Is that what we do?
Well, we've got to get away from thinking that an election, and he said this, and this,
yep.
I mean, he didn't miss anything. He didn't miss much in his speech.
Exactly.
But,
he really didn't.
But we've got to get away from thinking that elections are going to change things.
Mm-hmm.
because until we take and break that banking taxing vortex, Kate, you've heard me preach this a zillion times already, so I'm sorry to be repeating it again, but it's the truth. We've got to break the bind, the grasp of the banksters, because they do everything imaginable to blackmail or buy or scare a new politician. You put a freshman politician there, it doesn't matter how good he is. I mean, it really doesn't change anything, because they're going to compromise everybody in Washington. They've got too much of a grip. They've got gangsters. They've got banksters. They've got the media. They'll crucify you with rumor if they have to. They'll send you home just based on a media report, whether true or false. And if it's false, they'll make it up. They'll create a situation. They'll send a hooker into somebody's room while they're sleeping and take pictures of them. I mean, it's just the depth of the deprivation of these people that are controlling Washington, D.C., and really the whole world, is just beyond the average person's imagination. And basically, Alan Keyes said that.
Right. And, you know, it's not only just the people who were voting for, but not only breaking the banking vortex, as you eloquently talk about a lot. I mean, in my last post on Dr. Kate's View, it's the media. We have to break them up as well, because you won't get a word in edgewise with these people. And they're all bought off. I mean, just look at the mistruth we've been told, even how expendable we are as Americans, that we could accept the killing of 3,000 people on 9/11 and not even look beyond the most obvious media lies and government lies. It's unfathomable. But breaking them up is also extremely important right now. The only thing I can do is tell people to get rid of their TV and don't do cable or anything like that. But this is really even bigger. It seems like if we're going sometimes to try to shut Washington down, we've got to think about shutting the media down. But it's just lockstep, and of course the banksters have control of the media, as they also have control of the banking system that we're in. So it looks pretty dire. And I was delighted to hear that Keyes has an idea about the Electoral College. How do we break into that? And what do you think about that?
Well, you know, I agree with what he said. I'm not sure. You know, there are several barriers you got to get through. I mean, look at what's happening right now to the delegates of Dr. Paul. You got that 70-year-old guy that the police broke his hip down there in
yep.
Louisiana. You've had three or four now state assemblies, where they've refused to allow an objection to the officers chairing the meeting when the party rules says that you're allowed to object to the chairman that comes in and elect a chairman by the delegates that are present. And they have totally refused to allow them to do that, knowing that it was a Ron Paul supporter that was there being nominated as a new chair. So you look at that, you look at that situation, you recognize that at the very core that of the GOP, for example, that the establishment, the bankster establishments that are really behind installing many of your top GOP people, control these state parties. So, you know, you've got to overcome that. You've got to be ready to fight a battle more than just going in and being a little bit of a voice. It's just like these people that have gone and literally reset up the assemblies out in the parking lot and established a quorum. I mean, that took some advanced planning. I mean, some of those people showed up with even sound systems, so they knew what they were up against, and that's kind of what you got to do to accomplish what Keyes is talking about. You got to go in and force you've got to coordinate with other people to ever get to that point, and you've got to be able to, just like taking a grassroots support petition to a legislator in the state to try to get him to sponsor a particular bill or not fight it in some cases. That's what you've got to do. You've got to come in force, ready to literally have the votes to vote. Let's say a county chair or a state executive committee chairman for the party. That's the kind of thing that you're talking about doing in order to get the right electors in place, because those electors are positioned by the party people.
You know, Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, paying attention to the electors is something that no one has ever done. And Keyes is right. They're all just the party bosses getting their rewards. And how the Ron Paul delegates set up the conventions in the parking lot and so forth, it seems to me that not exactly like the Continental Congress, but we've got to kind of set up our own our own government. And, you know, as Congress is deliberating, like even on January 9th, 2013, we should be right up there and voting out, you know, the gangsters. And I just feel like it's reaching a breaking point. I know that they're trying to get us to riot, but I think it's got to be on our terms, not theirs. If it's on their terms, I think that we will be in for something. In the longer route, if you look at the depth of the corruption, nothing but something like a Gideon strategy is going to work.
If you're hearing a lot of background noise here, it's because I've got a significant hailstorm, electrical storm going on.
Wow. Right, that is a big storm. That is a big storm. Well, I'm going to finish out our hour here. There's some great things in the chat room. There's the media is part of the conspiracy, all the Bilderberg stuff. I'm sure you watched the Alex Jones stuff, and you saw Pam Geller's speech, or basically her comments against Ron Paul. And what I find very interesting is that people are showing themselves, and that is what the end times have told us, is that the evil ones are going to be exposed, and the conspiracy that has really encircled us. It's like our enemies have compassed our camp. And I just wanted to ask you to offer just a few final words before I just move this into a final music and winding down the evening.
I had a little bit of trouble hearing what you just said.
Oh, just help us wind down the evening. I just kind of had a bunch of scattered thoughts about the media's conspiracy, the people who you think are on your side, like Pam Geller, who really stand up and show themselves as far as what they are supporting and what they're not. You know, the assaults that have taken place in our country against constitutionalists. And there's no question, if you stand up, you're going to get assaulted. And so that's what we all have to understand, and also not shy away from that. As Keyes was saying, the courage that our Creator God gave us, we have to work with that. So I'm just going to spare the listeners tonight with my dribbling around on a bunch of different issues and close the evening with some music, but I wanted to offer you the chance to have any last words or parting thoughts you'd like to leave us with tonight.
Well, as I said to you earlier today, I have very little faith in many of those who are ex-Santorum people who have kind of teamed up with the Ron Paul folks. I believe that the loyalty and the understanding of the depth of the problem is so much greater with those who have been Ron Paul supporters all along that I do have my concerns. So I would reach out to all of our listeners and say, if you know anyone out there, let them know how important their job is going in to this GOP convention in Tampa. If you know of anybody that's got a ticket to make it to that as a delegate, boy, encourage them to toe the line and not just cave to this bankster appointment, because that's what it is. It's not an election. It's not a fair nomination. We talk about voter fraud. We talk about election fraud. Well, we've got it going on right at the party level. You don't have to wait till the national election to have that. It's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to stand behind these people and encourage them and let them know how important their task is if you know anybody that's going to that convention.
Well, I thank you, and I agree. And before I close with some music, I'd just like to remind everybody, and Terry, perhaps you could, about Walls in Our Minds tomorrow night. It's going to be a very, very interesting show. You want to say anything about that?
Well, sure. It's certainly going to be different. I mean, it's certainly a change for the way that we've approached it. We've always brought somebody in that was, you know, either controversial or very knowledgeable on certain topics and tried to offer solutions. Well, tomorrow night we're bringing in a guy who's been a radio personality, who is apolitical. He's a self-confessed apolitical person. That is, he just does not really follow, or he's not particularly passionate about politics. And we're going to discuss with him how you might, encourage somebody or educate somebody who really is not that knowledgeable, has not followed things the way that we have, how we would talk to a person like that and how we would encourage them or bring them along. So that's going to be a very interesting show. And Dr. Kate, I'm really happy that you're going to participate in that with us.
Yeah, you know, it's we are all so educated about these issues, and we feel the panic and the urgency that it's hard not to come off as a fire hose. And, if we understand from this individual who's coming what works or what doesn't, this is going to be very illustrative for all of us. So I'm glad that you're having that show tonight and tomorrow night, and happy to be invited. And is there anyone in the chat room who has any other statements? Hi, everyone. Hello, Vet. Nice to see you. Please catch the archive. There was a great speech from Alan Keyes this evening. And I'm going to sign off this evening and wish you all a very pleasant evening. And please join us tomorrow night. Next week on Wednesday's Revolution Radio, I will have the author of the book Admit the Horse, Paula Abdulis, which is a political thriller based on the 2008 election. We hope you join us, and good night, everyone. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Good night, Kate.
Good night, Terry.
Lockdown.